KALW.
Coming up in a special presentation from KALW News, we'll share insights into the lives of Muslims.
Show us doing something good, like, you know, like baking a cookie or something, right? Because I've been to Iran, we have cookies. Just once, I want CNN to be like, now we're going to go to Muhammad in Iran. They go to some guys like, hello, I'm Muhammad, and I'm just baking a cookie. I swear to God, no bombs, no flags, nothing. Back to you, Bob.
That joke from a Muslim comic inspired a podcast about identity beyond Islam.
I want to create a space for people like me to transcend categories.
And we'll hear from one of those people, a young writer who created a romantic life for herself online as a teenager.
God, my mom's going to kill me, but it's okay. Love you, Mom.
From the podcast Tell Them I Am, we're celebrating humanity for Eid al-Fitr. Stay tuned. Today is Eid al-Fitr, celebrating the end of Ramadan. For the world's 1.8 billion Muslims, it's a major holiday, the end of the holy month when people fast every day from sunrise to sunset. Folks today are celebrating a different major holiday, the end of the holy month when people fast every day from sunrise to sunset. Folks today are celebrating in different ways, prayer services, giving to charities, then dressing up, getting together with family and friends, baking and cooking, lots and lots of cooking. So today we're celebrating by showcasing a podcast from our friends at KPCC. It's called Tell Them I Am. It's about the small moments that define who we are and who we are not. The stories are universal. The voices are all Muslim, including the host, Misha Youssef.
My mom has told me this story, God, I don't even know how many times, about this thing I did when I was 3 and my sister was like 5 days old. It goes like this. My mom hears something, walks into the room where I am with my sister, and sees me throwing oranges at her. I know, I sound like a monster, right? She's like, Misha, stop, you're gonna hurt her. And I go, what? I'm doing it out of love. I have no idea what I'm supposed to think about myself when my mom tells this story. It does make me examine the jealousy I have in my relationship with my sister. Jealousy is something that I struggle with at work, in my relationship, all the time. It's part of who I am. You wouldn't know that if you met me. You'd see that I'm brown, petite, a woman, but you would have no idea who I am. You probably wouldn't even know that I'm Muslim. That's because I don't really fit what a lot of people think a Muslim is supposed to look like and act like and live like. And maybe I don't go out of my way to tell them because when they have found out, they ask me things like, where's your headscarf? Or how come you're drinking? Which makes sense because the only time Muslims are ever on TV or in the news, we're asked about Islamophobia or terrorism or our headscarves or praying 5 times a day. We're being pigeonholed, like we're only thinking about being Muslim 24/7. It's like we're only allowed to have one of 5 characteristics. God forbid you have a 6th. When I was 11 years old, I saw Maz Jo Brownie's Axis of Evil stand up. And there's this line in it that I think about all the time. It goes something like, and here's Muhammad. He's a Muslim baking a cookie
or something, right? Because I've been to Iran. We have cookies. Just once, I want CNN to be like, now we're going to go to Muhammad in Iran. They go to some guys like, hello, I'm Muhammad. And I'm just baking a cookie.
So there's another line that I think about all the time. It's this passage in the Old Testament that I read for the first time when I was 16. It's an important moment in all 3 Abrahamic religions. It's the moment Moses leaves Egypt and goes to Sinai.
He leaves behind the royal court and all the privileges of it.
I had the chance to ask this religious scholar, Reza Aslan, about it. So Moses walks up to a burning bush and he hears a voice.
The voice of God.
And the voice tells him to go back to Egypt, to his people. And Moses is like, what? Who are you?
Who should I say sent me?
The voice doesn't say a name, a religion, a gender.
The voice quite famously says,
it says something really unexpected.
You can tell them that I am I am.
It says Yahweh.
That's just a Hebrew word that means I am, I was, I will be.
Yahweh is not a name.
the deity didn't say, tell them I am Yahweh. That's not what he said. He said, tell them I am.
Tell them I am. You know, I'm not a religious scholar, but I was so struck by this. The voice doesn't want to be categorized. It can't be. It was hard for Moses not to categorize him. Even God was getting typecast. And it's hard for all of us not to categorize each other. But what a great example for those of us who want to transcend category. This is why I'm making this show. I want to create a space for people like me to transcend categories. I want to show a Muslim baking a cookie. Because our most noticeable traits are often not our defining ones. So in the last 6 months, I've asked 22 people, what's a moment in your life that defines you?
If somebody would say something, I would just turn it into a song. You might say, hey, we're going to be late, babe. We're going to be late. Got to get going.
When you say you were a giant goth, like what did that look like for you?
Oh my gosh. So I was the kind of insufferable kid who would say
well, thanks. I'm not usually that good on the show. I get in trouble all the time.
Came out stripped down naked and more or less like ejaculates herself.
I would just do it like every so often. Okay, so tell me a little bit. Yeah. Are you in the comedian part right now of your life or the Postmates part?
Comedian part right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might actually order Postmates at some point. I'm not quite there yet,
yeah.
But one day.
When she was putting together her podcast, Tell Them I Am, Misha Youssef saw parts of herself in all kinds of people around her. Chefs, actors, fashion icons, skateboarders, astronomers, scholars, people her age, people her parents' age, her grandparents' age. Some are famous, some aren't, but all are Muslim. She made an episode to air each weekday during Ramadan, and today we're going to hear one of them.
This past winter, my little brother announced to me that he was going to formal with a girl. He's 14, the youngest in my family. I was crazy excited because now I could tease him forever. And then a couple days after that, he tells me he has a girlfriend. I'm like, the girl you're going to formal with? And he goes, no, different girl. Sorry. And he says, the formal girl is just my friend. And I was like, okay, cool. You sure your girlfriend's okay with you going to formal with someone else? And he's like, yeah, totally fine. Then, like 2 weeks later, he was like, me and my girlfriend broke up. And I was like, what? Why? Apparently, a third girl who is madly in love with him spread rumors about him being a player. So his girlfriend was like, Ozzy, let's take a break. With all the seriousness of a 40-year marriage. Anyway, Ozzy was heartbroken for like a week. And then he was back at it, playing video games and Snapchatting his life away. Here's the crazy thing. The whole time this was happening, my parents had no idea. Or they had some idea, but they were like 2 weeks behind, which in teenage years is a whole relationship. But Ozzy's secrets are nothing compared to Nejma Sharif's. Do you remember who, like, your first crush ever?
Wow. I was just a player, I guess. I don't remember. My name is Nejma Sharif. I am best known for my tweets, but I'm a writer.
How old are you?
I'm 24. In seventh grade, I had like my first thing with a guy. It was 2007. So he wore the like baggy shorts and like the really baggy, like Soulja Boy-esque, like white t-shirts and stuff. And like he'd always have like a pick in his hair. Wow, how do I remember this? I don't even know. We didn't even like talk to each other. Like it was one of those things where you're like, oh, we're going out now. Okay, we're going out.
How do you know you're going out if you don't actually talk to each other? The internet. Duh. Specifically, AOL Instant Messenger, known to the millennials out there as AIM.
We'd be like messaging each other all day and all night. I do not know what my parents thought I was doing on the computer, but I was just messaging boys like day in and day out.
What was your AIM username back in the day?
Oh my God. Okay, I think my AIM username was like Nejmalicious 1000 or something.
But like most middle school flames, Nejmalicious 1000 and her seventh grade boyfriend's candle burns hard and fast. And it's pretty much drama the whole way through its very young, very short life.
April to like the last day of school is like very dramatic. It's hot outside and everyone just gets like really aggy and all the drama unfolds like the last 2 months of school. So during lunchtime at John Adams Middle School, folks would come outside.
She meets him at the basketball courts. There's a ton of people around. They're both facing each other, standing under one of the hoops.
All I remember is really walking up and then him saying, oh, I need to talk to you. And then I was like, what? And he's like, it's over. And everyone's like, oh. And I'm like, whoa, this is so humiliating. Oh, my God. I cannot believe he embarrassed me like this. You can't even, like, reply at this point because, like, everyone's, like, laughing and, like, sneering at you. So that's what I was. I was, like, surrounded by people. It was, like, everyone heard what happened.
I feel like everyone has a somewhat tragic middle school event in their lives. And for Nejma, this was hers. Would you say this was, like, a turning point for you?
I would say, kind of. It made me, like, really bitter.
She's laughing, but she's not entirely joking. She made a decision that day that would stick with her for years.
I was like, I'm playing all these dudes. I don't care. I'm never gonna like anyone again. I was like bumping Cherish. If you remember who Cherish was, they had like the song. I was like playing that all like the entire day. I was like so sad. In that moment, I think I learned to like not do too much. But I still did a lot. I just didn't involve like all of my emotions in it.
Remember how Nejma said a little earlier that she guessed she was a player? This moment is when that started. But it's kind of hard being a player when you're a Somali American teenage girl growing up in Rochester, Minnesota, and you aren't actually allowed to talk to boys.
The locus of the community was the mosque. And we spent a lot of time at the masjid praying, going to like Islamic studies classes on the weekends, sometimes on Fridays too. So there was just always a divide, like a gender divide in classrooms. And we were like strictly forbidden from like talking to guys in public, basically. Like everything was very stush.
On top of that, it's kind of hard being a player when your town is really small and everyone talks to everyone.
Like the anti-surveillance network in Rochester was like insane. Like you could be anywhere in town and your mom will get a call and you'd be like, how do you know? Like who told you? You don't know who's seeing you or anything.
In 2012, when Nejma was 17, she figured out the best way to navigate romantic interactions. And it wasn't very different from middle school.
Most of the time, what would happen is we'd see each other at school and then be like really weird about seeing one another because no one ever taught us how to talk to the opposite like gender or anything or anyone, to be honest. And then we'd end up following each other on the internet and stalking each other. And then eventually folks would end up messaging each other like, hey, I saw you today. You looked cute. And then you'd like start talking.
And by talking, she mostly means tweeting or messaging, just like way more than before. And so that's the system. Essentially, the teenagers of Rochester are perpetually online dating, especially at the mosque during Ramadan, which is apparently a huge opportunity for boys and girls to see each other IRL.
So basically, most of the time, it would be like a meetup spot because everyone would be at the mosque during Ramadan, like everyone. I lived right down the street from the masjid. I lived downtown with my dad at the time. And I just had a lot of freedom. So I would end up hopping over to the mosque and sometimes praying the entire Taraweeh, sometimes not.
Najma's dad's sick and a lot of his focus is spent on recovering at home. Her mom isn't living at the house with them. So yeah, she has some freedom to be out and about and do normal teenage rebellion things, which mostly consists of sneaking around, talking to boys. And she goes through all the hoops not to get caught. But before we completely rat her out, a message from Nejma.
God, my mom's going to kill me, but it's okay. Love you, Mom.
Okay, so first of all, she and all her friends change all the guys' names in their phones to girl names.
So I never had guy names in my phone because I just didn't want like a text popping up and then getting in trouble for talking to like one of the many Muhammads in town. Like, who had time for that? I didn't.
She definitely sneaks out a handful of times.
I wasn't really good about sneaking out. I mean, I did it a few times, but that was always more difficult because you never knew when you'd come back and driving and stuff and whatever.
More often, though, it's just easier for her to sneak boys in.
I had like my room in the basement and I would just kind of like open my window and they just slip in.
And here's the crazy thing. She gets away with everything. She's so good at hiding stuff and talking her way out of things that she has a near perfect track record. Her parents even trust her. And on top of all of that, she uses the mosque as her alibi when she's actually going on late night dates at the local lake. So she always shows up to the mosque looking really good.
Wing liner, blush, just all that to the mosque. For who? Obviously, it's not for God.
But this one night with this one guy, things get a little bit tricky. She's at the mosque for Tarawih. And as usual, she meets up with one of the guys she's been messaging.
This particular night, I guess we like snuck out early.
The coast is clear. Nobody sees them as they get into the car. And the two of them drive straight to the lake.
We were pulled up right up to the lake on like one of the sides that's like quieter. There's like kind of like a forest around us. And you can like see like the downtown skyline. And it's like late night. So all the lights are like gleaming on the lake. And it's really pretty. We had like a nice Muslim distance between us the entire time, like an arm's length distance as we walked and talked.
So they get back into the car and they keep talking. I know. I didn't believe her either, but I actually think she's telling the truth.
And then next thing you know, I see lights behind us.
Red and blue lights.
They tell us to get out of the car and I ended up getting out and he ended up getting out.
One of the cops is wearing sunglasses at night, which is understandably, very unsettling. They pull aside the guy she's with and they start running his info. Meanwhile, Najma is freaking out.
I was like really nervous. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get arrested. Like, why would I get arrested? Don't know. Just the worst case scenario just like came across me.
The cop with the sunglasses comes up to her next. He asks for her license. And as this is happening, the cops let her date go home.
I mean, he was like 19 at the time. So yeah, he was able to just go home because he didn't break any rules. I did, though.
Since she's only 17, she's technically out past curfew. So he looks at her with his sunglasses and is like, get in the car, I'm taking you home.
It was like maybe the first time that I was like, okay, I'm going to get caught now. I'm going to have to explain myself to my parents. So that was really daunting to think about at that time.
She gets in the car. And he starts to drive. And then, in a moment of blind teenage fear, she calls her mom and puts the phone on speaker so her mom can hear what's going on.
I mistakenly ended up calling my mom and hiding my phone when he was talking to me. So she heard some of what was going on.
And then the cop starts lecturing her. Like, not just about being out late, but also being out late during Ramadan.
And this is not like a Somali cop, by the way. Like, this is like some random white dude who is like lecturing me about the fact that like it's a holy month and I shouldn't be doing this. And I was just like, yeah, you're right. Cause I like did not want to get in any trouble. But I also just wanted to like be like, who are you? Like, why are you telling me this?
He parks in front of her place and is like, I'm gonna have to come in and talk to your dad.
And I'm like, oh my God. Please.
Her whole life, she's been talking her way out of things. This is the time of all the times that she needs it to work. So she starts with her dad.
I'm like, he's already stressed out enough. You know, like he goes to the hospital every morning for dialysis. I know this is going to make him even more stressed out. So please, I'm like, you cannot get me in trouble.
Then the cop's like, well, where's your mom? I can just talk to her. And Najma says,
my mom doesn't live here.
And the cop is stumped. So what does he do? He says, don't do this again or I'll have to tell your parents. And he lets her go. She gets out of the car, walks inside the house, and her dad's awake. She completely forgot that she called her mom, and her mom was so worried. She called Najma's dad and was like, what the hell is going on?
My dad's like, wait, what happened? Like, your mom just called me. Like, she just said, I'm like, yeah, I was hanging out with my friends, like, at the lake. We were just chilling, and then, like, we forgot, like, it was too late. And I tell all of my friends, like, in that moment, I text everyone, and I'm like, okay, by the way, we were at the lake, like, for a little bit last night, and the cops came, and then they, like, ended up taking me home because, like, y'all were all together, okay? And, like, they were like, bet.
And her dad believes her. She gets away with it. So she runs upstairs, her heart's racing. And just before she falls asleep, her phone buzzes. Her bad boy lake crush is texting her.
He was like, okay, am I seeing you tomorrow or something like that? And I was like, oh my God, I guess we're doing this again. Who cares if I almost get arrested?
They go back to the lake the next day. And this time, they kiss.
I never felt any shame around, like, anything I did that I wasn't supposed to be doing, especially, like, talking to boys. I felt more shame, like, at the thought of getting caught and, like, disappointing my parents and, like, that particular shame. But I also knew I could never get them to necessarily, like, understand, like, my interpretation of what I was doing. And, like, I never tried to, like, get them to understand me. And I didn't care to be understood or, like, to explain myself either. I just did what I wanted to do. I just trusted that I'd do the right thing. I mean, in a sense, they contributed to that by trusting me and trusting the kind of person I am. And I figured, well, if they trust that I know I'm going to do the right thing, then there's no possible way that I could be doing the wrong thing.
Do you consider yourself boy crazy still?
Not in the same way. I lived with my dad and he was alive, and it wasn't until I turned 18 that he passed. So there was, like, kind of a shift in, like, me. He and I talked about, like, everything, and my dad put a lot of value in the future and, like, school stuff and, like, your dream, my dreams, really. So, like, he was really there for me and supported me, even when, you know, because I was, like, a lying-ass kid, and he would always be like, I believe Najma. Najma never lies. And that was the funniest thing ever, because I was just like, oh, someone believes me. I don't know why, but I'm getting away with this again. So he let me get away with a lot. But, yeah, just to always know that someone believes me as, like, a person, but also, like, believes in me, that was, like, something I ended up losing when he passed. Because when I think about the kind of guys I was talking to when I was younger, no, just never gonna happen again. Like, what? Where were my standards?
Losing her dad and the trust he had in her kind of changed things.
I don't know how to explain it, but, like, I grew up with so much love around me, and, like, I saw what I deserved on a daily basis and then realized that I didn't really have to, like, work for it. Like, it was just always there. So in that sense, like, I think I'm more obsessed with the idea of, like, that stability with someone for, like, a long period of time, and, like, looking for the kind of support that is, like, reciprocal and, like, fun and trusting and just all these qualities that I would want in, like, a future, like, partner and father, like, of my children. So I thought about it a lot. I'm not the same as I was when I was younger. Maybe it doesn't make me much of a hopeless romantic, but it kind of does, because I'm a Pisces and that's what we all are.
That's Najma Sharif, and that was an episode of Tell Them I Am, a podcast out of public radio station KPCC. It was hosted by Misha Youssef, written by James Kim, produced by Mary Knopf, edited by Arwen Nix, music by David Lineyard, engineering by Sean Corey Campbell and Valentino Rivera. You can subscribe to podcast player and find links at klw.org. Our team includes engineers Tariq Foda and Kristen McCandless, content manager Shireen Adil, and news director Ben Trefney. Happy Eid, everyone. For KLW News, I'm Hannah Baba.